Welcome back to the Bruce Allen Show. And I just had a good laugh with my next guest, who is Dr. Weberman. She is a psychologist and parent coach, and I'm still laughing because we just had a good laugh on the break. She's got over a decade of experience in helping children, teens, and parents, and she's done a lot of good work in that regard in her private practice. And she is going to get the chance to employ some of all those lessons when she gives birth in, how long is it, Dr. Weberman?
It's in May.
It's
14 weeks?
Around the corner. So let's have a health and welfare update on your baby and your pregnancy, please.
Okay. Well, tomorrow is week 26. Mm-hmm. And I'm feeling phenomenal. She is so active all day, all night. I feel her moving around. It's like a drumbeat in my belly. It's the most amazing thing. Sometimes I just lay on my back and watch my belly move up and down, and that's my entertainment for the night.
So is there any correlation, seriously, between the activity of a baby in the womb and what that child will turn out to be? Do you know about that? Does that mean something, that you'll have a hyper kid or a very athletic kid, or does it mean
I've nothing? Heard anecdotally that there's a correlation. So she's most active between midnight and 2 a.m., and there's a strong possibility that as a baby, that's when she's going to have her witching hour.
Lucky you.
And she's very active, and I've heard, you know, that certain pregnancies with very active babies led to very active children, but I don't know if there's any research to support it. But if it's true, we're going to be in trouble because she's not going to stop.
Well, given who the parents are, I think there's every likelihood that she will be a wonderful handful. So let's talk about independence. Do you have anything prepared for me today, may I?
Well, you know I do.
Really?
You know I do. Oh, my goodness. When you were talking about fostering independence in children, I was thinking about the children who are dependent and, you know, who lack mm-hmm. those skills. And there's lots of reasons why a child could be that way, but just focusing on the ones that are the product of the over-functioning parent.
That's a kind way to call them.
Yeah. I mean, these are the parents who are doing so much for their child, the child's not learning it for themselves. And that's what I wanted to focus on today is the over-functioning parent. And I think we've all seen it. The parent who child forgets their lunch and they run back to school and bring it, or they forgot their homework, or they're having trouble finishing a project, so the parent's doing the project for the child.
Yeah, the child's gone to bed and the parent is staying up late finishing. I love that.
It's so common, especially in these areas where the school districts are very competitive.
Right.
And parents know that other children are going to be bringing in adult-level projects because they had the same support at home, too. It becomes very competitive. So, you know, there's a couple of things that I want to help parents keep in mind when they're working on pulling back on that habit of over-functioning.
Right.
And the most important one is learning not to rescue them. If a parent can learn to tolerate his or her own emotions as they watch their child struggle, it makes a big difference. Your child's anxious because they're struggling with something or because they're up against a possible failure or a challenge, and then you get anxious about the fact that they're anxious. Anxiety is not a reliable signal that something is wrong, but we treat it as if, you know, there's an alarm going off, that there's a danger,
wow.
and we really need
wow,
to get in there
so,
and fix it.
That's so smart. That's so smart. And if the irony, of course, of what you're saying is, and I'm sure you've seen this and you agree with me, is we all learn more from failure than success.
Yes, but we don't always remember that in the height of the moment when
right,
we're reacting
right.
to our feelings and our emotions. And if you can change your thinking and you can see that the discomfort that comes with a struggle is a natural and necessary part of learning, like you just said, then your whole way of being in that situation will change, and then your child can learn to tolerate it and work through it. But as long as you're reacting, you're never going to get to that other side of it.
Mm. Okay, go on with other things.
Another piece to remember is, you and I have spoken about this so much, is about learning to embrace failure.
Mm-hmm.
And really see it as a teaching tool. Kids who are highly dependent because of the overfunctioning parent tend to be risk averse, meaning they don't want to take chances. because the idea of failure seems really uncomfortable and scary for them. And if we can teach children by modeling it for ourselves to embrace failure and see it as a teacher, then they'll be much more willing to take chances and put themselves out there. When they're being so dependent, they're sort of being under-functioning. And sometimes when you have an over-functioning parent, you have an under-functioning child. And as long as they're so timid about taking risks, they're never going to be able to see what they're capable of.
Ugh, that is so darn true. And I think one of the biggest ways a parent can hurt or help it is how we react to their failure. If they come back and we have this horrible reaction, oh my God, you got cut from the team, or oh my God, you got a C, and we react as if it's the end of the world, it's only going to perpetuate the problem. If we react in a much more calm manner, like, okay, so you got cut from the team, what else would you like to do this year? And then maybe they'll react, because they so much take their cues, especially when they're younger, from our reactions.
Yes, and our reactions to our own failures when they're witnessing them.
Right, that's so
and
true.
And so the opposite of that, you were talking about how we can be okay with failure, but the opposite side of it is also what we choose to praise and focus on, our positive attention. And there's some really interesting research about the difference between praising ability and intelligence and things like that versus praising effort and tenacity. So if there's a character trait that you want your child to develop, like perseverance and determination and courage, then that's the thing that you want to give the attention to. By praising their ability and their intelligence, you can actually inadvertently, for some kids, teach a fear of failure. And they did this amazing study, and I don't even have time to go into the details of it, but they just had these two groups of kids, elementary school age, separated them in two groups, gave them a problem to do, and in one group they praised the kid saying, you got it right, you must be really smart. And the other group they said, you got it right, you must have worked really hard. And then they gave them further problems and, you know, more problem-solving skills to do, and what they saw was the kids in the group that were praised for their intelligence became so fearful of taking on new challenging tasks, it affected their performance. They were lying more often during the study about how they were doing better than they really were. And the kids who were praised for their effort wanted more challenging problems. They wanted to learn more strategies to solve those problems. They wanted to teach other kids how to solve those problems, all just by changing the way that the kids were praised. And
what,
so that's a big piece of it, too.
Wow. You need to write another blog. You can add that to the 42 on my list for you.
Is it only 42 at this point? That's not so bad.
You know, there's another thing that I thought came to mind when you talked about the fear of failure. It's also teaching our kids to know how to handle conflict. So often they're protected from dealing with conflict. And learning how to handle conflict and resolving conflict is a gigantic skill that I don't think a lot of our kids are being taught by their parents, or certainly not at school.
I 100% agree with you. And I think the commonality between those two situations is that they're both uncomfortable. And I think as a culture, we've gotten more uncomfortable with discomfort. Because we have so many things that we're told can help us be more calm. I mean, all the things that we're marketed, you know, towards us are about making our lives more comfortable, emotionally, physically, all of that. That I think that we've just gotten to the point where when we're uncomfortable, we see it as a danger and we avoid or we deflect or we blame or we do something, when really that discomfort is just a signal that you're about to do something really big and we've got to get to the other side of it.
Well, speaking of discomfort, I'm almost out of time, so I'm getting very nervous because we don't have any time left, and I want to make sure our listeners know where they can find you.
Oh, fantastic. So the blog is theparentingplayground.com. And hopefully by next week, I'll be able to give you the new domain name for my new website that we'll be launching for on schedule. So I'll have to hold on until next week.
Well, let me help you with that. Let me help you promote it.
Oh, fantastic. I would love that. On Facebook, I'm there under the same name as The Parenting Playground. And on Twitter, it's dr_Weberman.
Excellent. Congratulations on all and the pregnancy. I'll talk
Thank
to you,
you
next week. Please stay tuned for some closing comments after these messages. Do not mess with Mr. In Between. No. Do not mess with Mr. In Between.
It's a Bible.